Unlock your Bible. Discover the true meaning of life. Learn the cause of world problems and the astounding solution. Prove for yourself what the future holds. In the Trumpet Literature Library, you will find answers to life's most important questions. Explore these vital titles on Trumpet Bookshelf.
Welcome to Trumpet Bookshelf. I'm Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you live this morning from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma. And around here, we're just now finally starting to feel a fall chill in the air. The weather has changed. The season has finally changed. We're not experiencing 100-degree heat anymore, which I actually enjoy, but nobody else seems to. So seems like everyone's a little bit happier around me right now. It's also been a really frenetic time here at headquarters, at least for me. Maybe I'm just projecting that onto other people, but it does feel like it has been a hectic time of year just in the last couple weeks as we all prepare as members of the Philadelphia Church of God to travel to sites around the world to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And that will be from October 14th through October 20th. And technically, October 20th is a different holy day, and we'll talk about that one next week. But the Feast of Tabernacles, this is the sixth out of seven annual observances that members of God's one true church keep every year. On previous editions of this show, I've been talking about the other fall holy days. So the Feast of Trumpets, which pictures the return of Jesus Christ to end World War III, to essentially force all mankind at first to be happy and to obey his loving government. And then you have the Day of Atonement, which is actually still coming up this year on October 9th, picturing Satan being removed, Satan finally bearing the guilt and blame for all of the sins he has caused mankind to commit. And he will finally be bound up in a bottomless pit for 1,000 years. The 1,000 years mentioned there is what we picture during the Feast of Tabernacles. We picture a millennia of peace and prosperity on this earth under the loving government of God. This is a time where the entire earth is being healed and restored after a nuclear World War III, after many powerful nations struggled and fought with each other for world domination and were put down by Jesus Christ himself. And finally, all of these people, all of mankind that has been living its own way, will be submitting to God during this 1,000-year period that we picture during the Feast of Tabernacles. It's actually quite an exciting feast. Just think about the command in Deuteronomy chapter 16. It actually is a command that we should rejoice. You can see that in Deuteronomy 16, verses 14 through 15. God tells you to rejoice. He tells you to make sure that your entire family rejoices. Everyone who is anywhere around your family, anyone who has a part in serving your family at the feast, whether other church members or other people we come into contact with in the community. And even it says to make sure that everyone within your gates is rejoicing. So basically, it is all-encompassing. It's talking about everybody. We are personally responsible at God's Feast of Tabernacles, wherever he has placed his name around the world, to make sure that other people are rejoicing. That is a command. And that is why we would call this the most wonderful time of the year. You hear that, those lyrics referring to Christmas season in the world, and yet really this is the most wonderful time of the year. I'm always amazed just by the fact that in the church, we actually have a festival department. How can God's church be considered restrictive and no fun if we have a festival department? A department that works year-round to help us make sure we're able to rejoice at God's feast. And we do save up a tenth of our income, This is our second tithe. We pay it to God, but the way we pay it to him is by spending it at the feast and at these other holy days to a lesser extent, but especially at the feast, because we'll be traveling, we'll be living in temporary dwellings, hotels, and it does cost a bit of money. But God says, hey, get what you want. Enjoy yourself. Have a great time at the feast. Use this tenth of all your annual income to rejoice. Live like royalty during this time. What an excellent time of year this is to be looking forward to this, making our final preparations. Again, this starts on October 14th. And technically, it even begins the night before on October 13th. So, a really, really high time of anticipation. Seven days in a row of just rejoicing. On that first day, we give an offering to God, and it is a high holy day. And the other 6 days are not holy days, but we continue to learn all about God's plan for us in the world tomorrow. This 1,000-year period, free from Satan's influence, where we are trying to comfort the survivors of World War III. We are helping them build their families again, rebuild their lives, rebuild their communities and their nations. And this time, they'll be rebuilding God's way. So it just really is incredible that we are expected to rejoice and even commanded to rejoice during the feast. This is actually something that God commands his ministers today to be helpers of your joy. So helpers of the joy of all the members. You can see that in 2 Corinthians 1, verse 24. So the ministers who are charged with teaching God's people are to be helpers of our joy. They are to lead the rest of us into being joyful. So just think about the parallel there. The teachers in the church today are helpers of our joy, but in the world tomorrow, all of God's people who are committed to him today will be teachers. We will all be teachers of all the human beings left on earth after World War III and all of their generations as they repopulate the earth. We'll be teaching them, and we will be helpers of their joy. That will be our job, to help them recover from the traumatic experiences in that time of worldwide punishment and war. And we will show them again how to be happy and unafraid. There's nothing to fear in the world tomorrow. Even all the animals during that time will be tame. You only have to worry about wild animals that eat other living beings. Even that will be different. And of course, there is a time frame to all of this. All of these holy days do reveal God's perfect timing. All of those who are baptized and converted and remain loyal today before the return of Jesus Christ will be converted to spirit when Christ returns. And we will be the bride of Jesus Christ. We will be spirit beings ruling in God's government, taking care of spiritual responsibilities. But all of our children, all of those who are not yet baptized when Christ returns, will have a chance to be the physical leaders in the world tomorrow. And they'll be taking care of physical responsibilities like landscaping and architecture, maybe teaching elementary school or other physical subjects like science and history. A lot of physical jobs will have to be done. Mass production of clothing is going to be an important thing. I mean, think about people who survive a war. They're probably not going to have any possessions, and we're going to have to make sure that they have at least some clothes. And of course, we'll be preparing for all the rest of the human beings who have ever lived and died to be resurrected at the end of the 1,000 years. And that's something that we'll talk about in the next episode. But all of those people, about 100 billion people, will need to be taken care of physically as well. And we'll have to be preparing and stocking up resources to to take care of 100 billion people at the end of that 1,000 years. So there is a massive rebuilding project of the earth, flattening many of the mountains, making much of the sea usable. If you just look at a map of the earth, or just look at a globe, think about how much of that water is completely unusable for human beings. How deep that water goes, how so much of it isn't even possible to drink because it is so polluted or salty. Much of that water will be turned into land. The land will be raised, the land will be lowered, and it will be made inhabitable. The water will be made usable. Agriculture will be done the right way. Humans will all have their own plot of land, about an acre each, rather than being packed into dangerous cities. There are so many physical jobs to do, and our children, the unbaptized among us today, who are still attending with the PCG, will have the chance to be in charge of all that. But this is just what we're picturing at the Feast of Tabernacles. Today, mankind's problems are spiritual in nature. We are suffering because we break the Ten Commandments. That is the main cause of all world problems. And of course, breaking physical laws, the laws of health, causes us to suffer as well. But really, it starts with breaking spiritual laws. It comes from this attitude of thinking we can do everything on our own. We don't need God's guidance. We don't need God's advice. We don't need to look into his instruction manual for us, the Holy Bible. We can do it all by ourselves in every area of life. But again, as I always say, where has that gotten us? What has that done for us? We've hardly accomplished anything that is entirely good. Everything man produces is a mixture of good and evil, just like that tree of the knowledge of good and evil back in the Garden of Eden at the start of man's existence. That is a mix of good and evil. That is the way Satan does things. Sure, there are good uses to technology today, but what about all the sins, all the addictions people get into because of screens? Or what about all the issues that we get into because of the mass production of food and stripping the nutrients to make things taste better, which then destroys our health? So yes, we're able to produce pretty incredible things, but how come every one of those things seems to have a downside? It's because Satan is inspiring human ideas. Humans think we have all the answers ourselves and that our ideas are original, and yet the reality is all of these ideas have been tried before, in some other variation at least, and all of these ideas are actually Satan's ideas. Man's mind apart from God is evil, and even with God's help, we have to struggle against Satan's influence. But we have thoughts that are inspired by Satan every day, and the decisions we make are so far removed from what God would have us do. You can look throughout your Bible for warnings about that, and just how our way of life, the way we think is right, the way we judge is right, based on our five senses, actually leads us to death. This is the world today on a collision course with death. That is why we have to repair the earth in the world tomorrow, which we picture at the Feast of Tabernacles. Also at the Feast of Tabernacles, the reason we live in a temporary dwelling, usually a hotel, maybe a camper or something else like that in some cases, is because we are picturing that we in God's church are citizens of another world. We're not citizens of America, Canada, Britain, Australia, any of the African nations or Asian nations or European nations or South American or Central American nations. We are citizens of God's coming kingdom. We are ambassadors of that kingdom. As such, we are not to be intertwined with the world. The world shouldn't dominate our thinking or our priorities or our interests. We are living as ambassadors for a new world. We have to live differently because we are showing the rest of the world what their beautiful future holds. That's why this way of life works so well. We're trying to picture a way of life where God guides everything we think, say, and do. And at the feast, the people who are in charge of the convention centers or the hotels or the restaurants we frequent at the different feast sites always seem to rave about us. They're always extremely sad to see us go. Now, there have been plenty of stories from these same managers that prove without a doubt that they are not always so sad to see other people go because they don't conduct themselves in a decent way sometimes. There can be drunkenness or loudness in the hotel rooms or uncleanliness or generally being inconsiderate. A lot of the time, it is almost like a hotel has to recover from a tornado after a big group comes in and then leaves. And yet that is not the case with our people. We are trying to conduct ourselves in a way that is a shining light to the world. We are trying to spread joy to everyone we come into contact with at the feast. There's a great article at pcg.church called Cause Rejoicing at the Feast, written by Mr. Ryan Malone. And he shows two specific ways that we can fulfill God's command to rejoice at the feast. The first one is simply to set an example of rejoicing. He says here, happiness rubs off on others. People are drawn to someone who is positive and radiating. Take the responsibility in your family to be the one who is radiating positive energy. That will do more to infuse your family with joy than simply telling them to be happy or sticking their noses in the scriptures. I've learned this from experience with my wife and daughter. When my daughter starts to get upset and she starts to cry, when I frown at her and then yell at her to stop, it usually doesn't work very well. Now, she doesn't have to listen to me when I tell her what to do, but still, if I'm frowning at her, if I'm upset, why would she be any happier than I am at the moment? But the more I smile, the more loving I am, the more happy she is too. Leading by example always works best. And that's the way we can really rejoice at the feast. I used to think you could sort of fake your way through and seem like you were happy. And the older I got, the more responsibilities I received, the more stress that came with that, I realized I couldn't hide it. I really had to have a flowing source of happiness within me, or else the happiness would never show, even as a facade on my face. I had to be keeping the vision of my future in mind. I had to be close to God, or else a frown would just naturally come through. In fact, years ago when I was at college, one of the staff members emailed me and said, "Grant, you've been actually so much happier lately. I haven't seen you frowning so much." And it was, sure enough, that was at a time that I had been making some personal improvements. And I'd been getting my priorities right, making some big changes, getting my focus in the right place. And sure enough, that's what made me happier. The spiritual focus, the Father focus, trying to make God happy made me a lot happier. So this is something that we have to be living. There has to be a deeper reason for our happiness, because we can't just put on a fake smile and fool anybody that way. So we have to set an example of rejoicing at the feast. The second point he gave here, practice this feast, putting others' needs ahead of your own. At the feast, at every site, there are numerous departments that are set up just to serve all the people at the feast site. There's a There's a department for just how services is run, organizing the prayer men, organizing those who do special music or offertory music, or who give the sermonettes and sermons, who are the song leaders, who are the accompaniment. Everything is put together decently and in order the way God likes it. There are those who are in charge of being ushers or safety staff or first aid, those who are in charge of setting up activities, or those who are in charge of setting up and tearing down the hall for services and for other activities. And all of this is done to make the feast better and more convenient for everybody else. It is an active way that people at the feast can cause rejoicing. And just remember, even if you aren't a church member, even if you're just listening to this as an interested observer, think about the future. Think about how this feast pictures the world tomorrow. And it pictures God's people converted into spirit, or as just the unconverted physical leaders during that time, really helping other people be happy. That's what we practice at the Feast of Tabernacles every year, this 7-day festival where we save up a tenth of all our annual income just to rejoice during this time. And we are to really be a picture of joy and help others be joyful too. That's what our job in the millennium will be all about. So today we've been just talking about the Feast of Tabernacles. We have a lot of excellent literature about all of the holy days available for free at thetrumpet.com, and I can put some of that in the show notes when this show is converted into a podcast too. This will actually be the last live edition of Trumpet Bookshelf until after the feast, but don't worry, there will be more live editions, recorded editions, in the weeks to come. There will not be a week off even through this feast break. So you can just keep a listen out for all of these upcoming programs. Next week, we'll be talking about the last great day, the seventh and final observance in God's master plan. And then we'll have a lot more to come after that. So thanks so much for listening today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Trumpet Bookshelf.
You've been listening to Trumpet Bookshelf. Please email your thoughts to comments@kpcg.fm. Listen for new episodes every Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time.